The August 2014 shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson produced a long series of complaints about social injustice and racial inequities, not just in Ferguson, but in other communities as well. Among the major complaints, that race and class played a big role in the way municipal courts functioned. The system has been the subject of a major study by St. Louis University. SLU political science professor Ken Warren oversaw a municipal court study where residents in rich and poor communities in the St. Louis region were polled and asked about their experience. He joins me in studio along with his SLU colleague, Professor Ness Sandoval, associate professor of sociology and anthropology. His focus is on urban inequality. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for being with us. Nice to have you. Ken, I'll start with you as the guy who oversaw this whole project. Give me kind of a general overview of your findings.
Well, we hypothesized that blacks would perceive their treatment in affluent as well as non-affluent communities worse than whites. Now, one would say, well, you would naturally expect that perception to bear out, but we had to, as social scientists, we really had to prove this. So we went out and we interviewed 753 people exiting municipal courts. And we certainly found that blacks did not rate municipal courts in affluent areas or non-affluent areas as well as whites did.
And that's no surprise there. I mean, we've been reading about this now for a year and a half and longer, actually.
That's correct.
Yeah.
We see that a lot of inequality has been moving out to the suburbs. So we would hypothesize that inequality that we traditionally saw in cities is now being replicated in our suburban municipalities.
Yeah. And again, Ken, you've been dealing with this issue for a long time. You were not surprised by what you found, were you?
Oh no, not at all. In fact, it's a real stain on St. Louis County in the inequitable treatment between blacks and whites. We found, Don, in every single category, in every single measurement, whether it was perceptions of police, how they were treated by police, how they were perceived, treated by municipal court officials, how they were treated by judges, in every single category, blacks perceived their treatment as worse than whites. And normally by far, by the way, it wasn't even close. Sometimes the difference was, 30-something percent, which is, a lot in a survey when, a difference is rating good to excellent in a category that's 73% said good or excellent, and then only 33% of blacks would see it that way.
What were some of the specific questions that you were asking?
Well, we wanted to find out whether they felt police treated them fairly, whether or not they treated them in a courteous way, whether or not that they essentially were combative. And we went on and on with different categories like that, and we found that whites felt that they were treated much better than blacks. One of the findings that was really disturbing, though, was the difference between how blacks and whites perceived their treatment in affluent communities versus the non-affluent communities. Now, we looked at 13 communities overall. And we didn't want to measure communities in between, like Webster Groves or Kirkwood or Baldwin. We looked at the really affluent communities with an income averaging over one household income, medium household income, over $111,000. And then we looked at the predominantly black poor communities or non-affluent communities where their incomes were about $30,000 to $31,000. So we looked at communities like Ferguson, Berkeley, Pagedale, Jennings, Normandy, of course, the worst one was, what's the community I'm forgetting?
Pine Lawn.
Oh, my gosh. Don, the difference between the perceptions in Pine Lawn and the perceptions of how they were treated in affluent communities like Town and Country and Clayton and Ladue and so forth was like night and day. One more statistic, and I want to turn it over to Ness here, but a startling statistic but predictable was Pine Lawn, a community of only about 3,400 people, generated $1.6 million in fines for their community. an enormous percentage of their total operating budget, and another, you know, few hundred thousand in court fees. And then you compare that to a community like Chesterfield, one of the affluent communities we looked at, and we found that here you have a community of 47,000 plus people that only generated $1 million in fines.
Nestor, you want to comment on that?
I think our findings are pretty incredible when you start to look at these results. Just a little bit about the study. So there were three parts to the study. One part that, in addition to the surveys, is the administrative data that we were collecting, which looks at the number of warrants that were being issued in the municipalities, and it looked at the disparity index that we were able to calculate for these municipalities. And so we wanted to bring this information to see if there were relationships between this administrative data that people can look at and the survey results. I think for me, the striking result, if you just look at one question, which is the overall how do you view the municipal court systems, we see that there was a big difference in terms of those who said that it was an excellent experience and those who said it was poor. 8 out of 10 people who said it was poor were from non-affluent communities, and roughly 8 out of 10 who said it was an excellent experience were from the affluent communities. Mm-hmm. And to me, that result in itself speaks to this overall finding of the studies, that there was this huge disparity between your experience, whether it's you had to go through an affluent municipality or a non-affluent municipality.
Well, what's the conclusion here? I mean, we have much to talk about, but are we talking about racism here, or are we talking about the need by these communities to raise money, which is obviously what they're doing?
I think there's an intersection between race and class. And so, indeed, I think a lot of these municipalities have been using traffic citations as a way to generate revenue. And one of the questions we asked was whether or not the citation was given to promote public safety or was the citation promoted to generate revenue. And everybody said it was to generate revenue. And so this was
everybody in all communities.
Well, 65% did, but I mean, what Ness is saying is that it didn't matter whether you're white or black. You felt that the communities essentially were issuing tickets to generate revenue and not to promote public safety. And Don, let me tell you that is a sad finding, because that is one of the reasons overall in America we find that people are condemning government. This is just one finding in our little study, but polls have shown since the 1950s that trust in government has declined. In fact, in the area of electoral behavior, pollsters feel that that's a single greatest finding by pollsters, that trust in government has declined enormously since the 1950s.
You did this poll last November. Was that is that
well,
correct?
Well, we did it year. September through the 28th of October.
Isn't there a chance that the poll is somewhat skewed with regard to the conclusion in the affluent communities that the courts are there to raise money by the fact that there's been nonstop publicity since the shooting death of Michael Brown, indicating that in fact is what has been happening? I mean, this has been a subject of discussion for a year and a half.
Yeah, well, we feel we've talked about that, and we feel that it hasn't contaminated the police behavior as much as the judicial behavior, because we also ask questions of police first in our survey, and then municipal court officials and judges. Okay, we found that judges overall were rated much, much better than police. Well, you know, when you think of it, are you going to be really bad to these people coming before you when you know that standing outside are interviewers going to ask, because most of these judges asked for the survey and they've looked at it. So I think that's one problem, you know, we have to note in our write-ups, that we feel that the perception of judges by blacks and whites is probably somewhat inflated in a positive way because judges were probably acting differently now than they were, let's say, 2 years ago before the Michael Brown shooting.
Inez, you buy into that?
Yes, I think that's a correct assessment.
Really?
Yes.
Let's take a call. We have Scott joining us from Chesterfield, one of the communities in the survey. Let's see what he has to say. Scott, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, every year the Attorney General does this study of racial profiling, and every year they find out that the contraband hit rate on traffic stops is higher with white drivers than with black drivers.
Correct.
I think that's kind of the bottom line, you know.
That goes to racism. That what you're citing definitely goes to racism, because what they're doing is they're checking out blacks more than whites, even though in fact they're finding more contraband actually with whites.
Right, and we still don't have a national database of police shootings, killings, beatings, you know, that type of thing. And that would be a good thing to have. And, you know, the police, it doesn't seem to me like they want to change. And I don't know. And the state legislature obviously has really done nothing except, you know, lip service.
Scott, thank you for the call. Ness, do you want to comment on any of that?
I was just going to add, so Chesterfield is one of these communities where the disparity index for black residents is 3.4, which means that they're being stopped at a higher rate than we would suspect based on their presence.
3.4 times as often as whites? What that means?
3.4. So an index of 1 means that you're getting stopped at what we would statistically say is what you should be stopped at. So they're at 3.4, which is 3 times higher than we would expect. Every affluent community, the disparity index is high for African Americans, which is, I think, goes to Ken's point, that there's an element of race here, that they're being stopped at higher rates than we would expect based on the proportion of the population in those municipalities.
Yeah, but having said that, if you look at Pine Lawn, on our bar graphs here, we show Pine Lawn is stopping whites at an enormous disparity rate compared to the population. The statistic is 17.2. So
more whites than blacks, are you saying?
Well, you know, a lot of it's common sense. Pine Lawn is predominantly black by far, and if you're stopping almost any whites, it's going to be so disproportionate to the percent that lives of whites who live in Pine Lawn.
Again, dealing with the poll and the survey, Ken, you and I have talked about this before, and that is when you're taking polls or gathering information with regard to race, it gets very, very tricky because people will not tell you exactly or honestly the way they feel, because they if it's negative to African Americans, they don't want to be considered racist. Does that come into play at all?
Yeah, but not as much, John, because what we did is we followed essentially the national exit poll procedure that they use for elections. And so we actually handed them. We would approach these people, or the students I hired would approach these people, and they would ask them if they would cooperate, and most of them did by far. And then we would give them a questionnaire. So we did away with what would be called interviewer bias.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's encouraging, and really feel that you've gotten the straight scoop from the people.
Is interviewer bias in phone calls, for instance. 75% say they can identify the race of the interviewer, and if a white interviewer asks sensitive questions about race, they're likely to get a much different response than if a black interviewer interviews a black respondent. Common sense would dictate, you know, that the interviewer, there would be interviewer bias.
It's a tricky proposition.
Right,
there's no question
about
it. Ness, I've seen you quoted as saying that this survey that you've taken and we're talking about now is a good tool. To be used by whom and how?
Well, I think it's a discussion. It's a tool to frame a discussion in terms of how we think about the reform in the municipal courts. And so, for one, the information should be given to policymakers. So to start talking about why there are these gaps in perceptions between affluent and non-affluent communities, I think municipal judges should have this information to kind of think about how people view their municipal courts. Not only the judges, but the staff, the clerks, and the police that work within the municipal court system. So I think it's a tool. I think it's what I would recommend is that it be longitudinal. So this is what I would consider our first data point. And so if we're thinking about policy, we want to think about the long-term impacts. We should be doing this at least once a year to see how perceptions are improving or changing over time based on some of these initiatives that are taking place.
Well, legislation has already been written with regard to the municipal courts. You know, you're saying that what you've learned here would suggest that we need some amendments to what has already been legislated?
Yes, I agree with what Ness is saying. I'm not sure about a survey every year, but certainly every 2 or 3 years. A survey would show whether or not the different policy changes that have been carried out are working. You know, in a democracy, Don, of course, I defend polls, but in democracy, there's nothing more consistent with democracy than asking people what they think. Mm-hmm. And so when you go out there and you ask blacks and whites what they think of their particular municipal court systems, the ones that they've just exited from and had an experience with, it's nice to know what they actually think.
Let's take another quick call here while we're talking about legislation. Brian joins us from St. Louis. Brian, go ahead, but make it quick, please.
Yeah, hi. Great conversation. My question kind of changed after listening to you. My original question was going to be, what specific legislation do you think we should have? But as I listen to you, it occurs to me that really all these problems are symptomatic of a confederated municipal government system. So now I'm wondering, would it be the best thing to get the legislature to move towards consolidation of these county municipalities so that there was more standardization and that law enforcement practices were carried out evenly across the region? That's my question.
I would like to take that.
I think that's the general feeling, is that we should have this discussion about unifying some of these practices across these municipalities. And I think that would be a helpful discussion to have in light of not only the survey, but some of these administrative findings that we're seeing tremendous inequality based on these municipalities.
Of course, it's easier said than done, by the way.
Yeah, and also maybe legislation is not the first line of attack. It should be an attitudinal thing on the part of the judges and the police and anyone else that gets involved in any of this.
We should start the discussion.
Well, you know, we've had that word discussion thrown around a lot in the last year and a half. There have been lots of discussions, but when you look at the legislature, for instance, precious little has come out of that aside from the municipal courts, the fines and fees legislation. Post-Ferguson. Oh, time is getting away. I want to get Janet in very quickly. Janet, make your question or comment very quick, please, but I think it has value here.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
My question is regarding the court officials of the municipalities who seem to get their revenue from the tickets. Where do the court officials live? Because from my experience, everybody in the court is white, and they are in a predominantly black neighborhood.
Janet, thanks. Very quickly, Ken, do you have a thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think she knows the answer to that. Most of them do not live in the communities, and particularly the prosecutors and the judges.
And Ness?
Well, I would say one of the things that we discovered in the study is that many of the people who were getting citations did not live in the municipality in which they got the citation. And so if we were to do the survey again, we would have a specific question on where they actually live to show this gap in terms of where the tickets are coming from.
I should point out the results of this survey will be presented at SLU's Law School tomorrow downtown, correct, at 2 o'clock, mm-hmm. and people can learn more about it then. I wish we had more time. There's plenty to talk about. But Ken Warren, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about your poll. Ness Sandoval, thank you for being with us as well and giving us your input. Appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with the University of Missouri St. Louis Chancellor Tom George. Then we'll meet spoken word artist and poet Sherez Gorman. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.